This conference will now be recorded.
Okay.
Good afternoon, everybody. Appreciate everybody taking the time today to attend this webinar. This is, Jenna said, this is the second webinar of our three-part series about the round two recompete for competitive bidding. We have with us today John Allman. Many of you are very familiar with John. John worked with MED for many, many years until he decided to strike out on his own and created one of the top-notch consulting groups out in the industry, and he's an expert at competitive bidding. You know, the last webinar was about getting all the information ready to be able to submit a bid, and I hope everybody's working on that. Again, we do recommend you don't wait to the last minute. Get that information in, get it done. If you decide that you don't want to bid, okay, you're fine. We would just hate to hear, and we've heard horror stories where people change their mind at the last minute and try to put in a bid, and they were shut out. So please don't do that. But at this point, what we're going to do is talk about, this is kind of where the rubber hits the road. We're going to talk about the composite bid and actually putting in the bids, understanding, you know, how this is going to affect your revenue, what is a bona fide bid, the how capacity plays into it, and so forth. So, again, we will be recording this. We will be placing this along with the presentations and the revenue analysis calculator or worksheet that John's doing on the MED and MHA websites for you. But at this point, I'm going to turn it over to John to get this thing started. John?
Well, thank you very much, Wayne. I appreciate the introduction. I appreciate the opportunity to help my friends at the MED Group and its members' companies. And for those of you that were with us last time, welcome back. You're certainly glutton for punishment to go through this again. We are going to be going at a much more measured pace for this webinar than we were the last time. The last time we tried to cover a great deal of ground in terms of the overall competitive bidding program. Today we're going to get down, as Wayne says, to where the rubber hits the road. We're going to get into some specifics, and to do that we're going to have to slow down the pace just a little bit because some of that is pretty complex. So everybody can take a deep breath, sit back, and enjoy the ride. For those of you that weren't with us, I'm going to do a three-minute recap of that session with the things that are most important. And I do this not only for those that were not with us, but also for those that were, so that you have a reminder, because this is time limited. We only have 49 more days until this round is complete and closed and over with. And there are a couple of deadlines in the meantime. Keep in mind that there are four steps to bidding. You need to register. If you have not registered, all is not lost. The registration window is open until February 17th. If you wait to register, if you have not registered and you wait further, you run into possibility of having some delay, and that delay can very often be some miscommunication or misinformation on the part of the NSC and PCOS, and you're running out of time to correct any of those errors. If you're not registered by the end of business on the 17th of February, you will not be able to bid at all. The second part is the bid application. That's your Form A. We'll talk a little bit about that. I believe that you should be really working on that. That opened up on the 22nd of January when the bid window opened up. That is an important step. That has to be taken in order to do the actual bid. And we're going to spend our time today talking about that bid, the bid process, what it means, how you do it, how you keep yourself solvent at the end of the day. And then finally, hard copy documentation. That's going to be your tax return extract, your statement of your income statement, your balance sheet, and your statement of cash flows, as well as a dated credit report. Over the last couple of weeks, I've seen a lot of credit reports for review go across my desk. And I do want to point out that it needs to be dated so that the CBIC, when they're reviewing this, will know that it was a credit report that was within the window of acceptability, which is essentially October 24th. It's 90 days prior to the opening of the bid window. It cannot be any older than that, but it should be dated so that that's very clear. There are, again, seven product categories, and there's 117 CBAs. The difference this time around from the original round two is that there are no CBAs that cross state lines. Interil, general home and equipment and supplies, that's your hospital beds, seat lifts, commode chairs, and so forth. Nebulizers, negative pressure wound therapy pumps and supplies, respiratory equipment, which includes CPAP. They are no longer separate categories. If you want to do CPAP, you're going to have to bid oxygen. If you do oxygen, you're going to have to bid CPAP as well. Keep in mind that you must bid every item within a product category in order to be considered for that bid. Standard mobility, this includes walkers, where walkers were a separate category before, and TENS, an added product category. We're going to, this bidding process is to replace the contracts that were assigned for round two. They all expire June 30th, 2016. So this is to have new contracts begin July 1st, 2016. So please keep in mind, there are rumors out there that, I already have a contract. They're just going to renew it. And this is for other people. It is not. It is a total reset. If you have a contract, it will expire on June 30th. And if you do not rebid, take part in the recompete, you will not have that contract renewed automatically. This is everyone that wants to participate must bid. A second rumor that I've heard more than once is that come January 1 of 2016, everybody's going to be able to participate everywhere on a, you know, any willing provider process. That is not true. What will take place in 2016 is the rural areas, or those areas of the country that are not currently under the round one or round two bidding process. In other words, places like the Central Coast of California, cities in Montana and North Dakota, et cetera, rural areas in the rest of the country that at present are not impacted by competitive bidding, they will have single payment amounts assigned to them. That's an entirely different issue, but it round two recompete, you must be part of that. There will be no any willing provider for the for those areas impacted by round two recompete. And it's going to be a 30-month term as opposed to 36 as it's been in the past. Here are your deadlines, and these are important because they are written in stone. It's going to happen this way. Again, February 17th, we're going to, that's going to be when your registration opportunity ends. Please, by that time, have your registration completed. February 23rd is the covered document review date. That simply is by a date by which you need to have your hard copy documentation submitted in order for them to give you what is essentially a free insurance policy, and that is the ability to have CMS let you know if a physical piece of paper did not make it to the desk of the reviewer, and then give you the opportunity to resubmit that piece of paper. And then the window closes on March 25th, and that's when it's game, set, match, and everything closes, and you may not do anything with your bid after that point. It'll be winter of 2016, which means the first quarter of 2016, when the single payment amounts are going to be announced, and at that time, they'll start the contracting process. In the spring, they'll announce the winners, and then, of course, in July of 2016 is when the implementation of the new round two recompete contracts will take place. To bid, you should be now working on your Form A if you have not already done so. form. The bid application and the bid process consists of two forms that are done online under what's called the DBID system. You simply go to www.dmecompetitivebid.com and go to round two, recompete and national mail order, recompete, and open that the window that says bidding is open, and that'll give you the opportunity to go in and complete your Form A. That's just going to be, here's my intent to bid, and that will then, at the completion of the Form A, give you a bidder number, which is what's going to tie your bid together with hard copy documents, and anything else that goes on relative to bidding will be tied together by the identification of your bidder number. The Form B, besides asking you for specific bid amounts, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is going to ask you about some services that you've provided historically, as well as some information about select manufacturers that that you will use. Those historic amounts are going to be predicated by the equipment that they will list by HCPCS codes. It won't be everything within the product category. It'd be selected by CMS. It will be on the Form B, and that will be your responsibility to complete the information that's requested. All of this is going to be online. None of your bidding, the Form A or the Form B, your actual bid itself is all online, nothing submitted by mail other than the hard copy documents that we referenced before in terms of your credit report and tax return and your financial documents. In some cases, there will be supplemental materials that you'll send hard copy if you've had a sanction, your corporate integrity agreement. If you have identified subcontractors and have a letter of intent, that will go in as well in terms of your hard copy documents. But the bid itself is online. When you do turn in your hard copy documents, please keep in mind bidder number on each and every page of the hard copy documents. If it's not there, that will be a rule transgression and will get you disqualified. You'll do one Form A, regardless of the number of CBAs or product categories that you're going to bid. And then every location that will be providing the services and products will be listed on your Form A as well. The Form B, again, three different sections. You're going to a little bit of historical utilization data, your bid sheet, and then essentially a certification statement at the end when you submit your bid. You may submit and approve bids and your Form A at any time between now and March 25th. And if you decide that you want to make any modifications or changes or deletions or additions, you may always do so. Nothing is finalized, nothing is reviewed, nothing is put in stone, nothing is compared until the end of the bidding window. So that gives you the opportunity to go online at any time during the opening of the bidding window and make those changes. Again, keep in mind that if you're going to bid, for example, two CBAs and three product categories in each of those two CBAs, you're going to be doing a total of six bids. All will be independently judged and evaluated, so you will need to keep that in mind so that it has kind of a geometric exponential way of increasing depending on the number of CBAs and product categories you're going to do. That brings us up to date. That brings us to today. And the questions that I get and the questions on most people's mind is how do they take what the information that we provide, how does this all get put into the blender and bids awarded and so forth. So we're going to try to take you through that process, kind of step by step, do a little demonstration of how that's done so that you understand clearly how they will end up at CMS selecting suppliers that they will award contracts to, how they determine a winning bid, and how they determine the single payment amounts. I believe that's necessary background in order for you to submit a reasoned and thoughtful an appropriate bid amount for your organization. The process we're going to go through today and the information is not going to guarantee that you win. Nothing that any consultant does or says is going to guarantee you a win. Nothing that any organization within the industry says or does is going to guarantee anybody anything. What it does, though, is make you more informed in terms of how you put this all together, with really the goal to put together a thoughtful bid and to meet all of the requirements of the bid so that you're not disqualified because of some technical error and that you're judged entirely on the competitive nature of your bid. Now, the bidding rule does establish, this goes back to MIPA and to the enabling legislation for this whole process we call competitive bidding, that established the methodology for selecting who's going to be a contract supplier. And in that legislation, it requires CMS to select a sufficient number of companies to meet what they expect to be the demand for the items within a product category within each CBA on the behalf of Medicare beneficiaries. Kind of a tall request, but it's one by which they have put together that methodology. Now, based on the bids that they receive, the CBIC, which is the Competitive Bid Implementation Contractor, that's Palmetto GBA, they're going to establish what is called a composite bid for each supplier, and they're going to do that by product category by CBA. And that composite bid is essentially the sum of your weighted bids for all items within a product category and a rank of the composite bids in order from lowest to highest. And we're going to show you how that works here in a second. The lowest ranked composite bid that includes a sufficient number of qualified bidders to meet beneficiary demand for the items in a product category will become the pivotal bid. That's an important process. That's the once they have reached the number of suppliers they need to meet anticipated beneficiary demand, that will create the pivotal bid. A qualified supplier is one that meets all of the bid requirements and whose composite bids are less or equal to the pivotal bid. And those are the ones that will be considered contract suppliers. And keep in mind that qualified supplier, and we'll probably repeat this a number of times, it's important to know that qualified suppliers have already met a number of the requirements and measurements that CMS and the CBIC are going to impose before they even look at your pricing. That is, you are licensed, you are accredited, you are a provider in good standing that meets all of the supplier standards. Your financials have been submitted in proper order and proper fashion, and in fact, have passed the qualification of being a healthy company to move forward financially. All of those hurdles, all of the information that you've put forth will qualify you, and only those that are qualified will move on to be evaluated in terms of what their actual bid is. Keep in mind that once you get to that point, it doesn't matter what the content was of your financials. It doesn't matter how many items you may say you're going to provide. It doesn't matter what your history is. Everybody will be judged independently, individually, based on what their composite bid is. Now, to establish a composite bid, the CBIC is going to use what's called an item weight. And this is a number that's 10 digits long from the decimal point. And that is assigned to each item within a product category that's based on beneficiary utilization or the cost to the Medicare system within that product category. And then as compared to the others, if you took a product category, and we can show this to you in the demonstration in a moment, if you take all of the products within the product category and you bid one, and that would be times the weight, the total composite bid, or the total weight for that product category is going to be 1. So think in terms of the weight as being the proportion of the Medicare dollar that each item within that product category represents. The item weight is going to be multiplied by the bid price that you submit, and that's going to be your weighted bid or the composite bid for that particular item. And then the sum of all of the weighted bids or composite bid items within that product category will then be totaled to come up with your total composite bid for the product category. Again, that is the number by which they will make a determination. So let's take a look at how that works. On the screen, what we've looked at is we have 5 companies here that are bidding for a product category within a particular CBA. 8 companies, A, B, C, D, and E. Boy, we were really creative in coming up with company names here. But nevertheless, those are our 5 bidding companies. Now, each one is going to be bidding exactly the same way. They're going to be looking at the weight of the item, which is assigned by CMS and shows up on your bidding form. They will also look at what's called the bidding limit. And that bidding limit is essentially the 2015 fee schedule for fee-for-service in that area, that CBA. You must bid at or below that number. You cannot bid over that number. And we'll talk about bona fide bids. You cannot bid so low that it won't be defensible in terms of your ability to make a profit on each and every item that you bid. So in that case, in terms of defensibility, the bidding of each item is important. Now, for the first item, A7003, it has a bid limit of $3.03. And if you follow the row across, you'll see that Company A bid $2.90. And they have a composite bid of $1.23 plus a bunch of change. Now, that is their composite bid or weighted bid for that item. And you can see they've done so for each of the items all the way down. And here is their total composite bid. So that essentially becomes the bid for Company A. Each of the following companies have done the same thing, but they've done a bid that is a different price, and they have different competitive or composite bids at the end of the day. So to recap how the process goes, it will be your bid amount multiplied times the weight, those two will be multiplied to end up with a composite bid, which will be totaled to end up with your composite bid. So every company that bids with that is qualified and will be judged in this manner. They will be all aligned. They will look at the composite bid for each one that is bidding in that product category for that CBA. This will be done for all 117 CBAs and all 7 product categories within those 117 CBAs. So, again, they're going to start this whole process by verifying your eligibility or qualifications. They're going to look at your enrollment standards, your licensure, your financial standards, quality standards, accreditation requirements, and the other program or competitive bidding rules. Only those that meet all of those qualifications and pass are going to be eligible for contracts, which means that they're eligible to be judged based on their actual bid. Now, as part of the process, you're going to be giving CMS a little bit of information relative to the capacity of your organization to provide items within the product category. You're going to give them some historical data at the beginning of the bid process in Form B. You're going to give them capacity numbers for each item, meaning how many units would your company be able to provide over the course of the first year of the implementation of the contract. CMS is and the CBIC are going to take all of this information, and they are going to put it together because they have already made some determinations of what the beneficiary demand within that CBA for the product category is going to be. And so they're going to use what's called capacity and the historical data that's provided by bidders to then determine how many suppliers they're going to need in any given CBA for the product category. So in the case that we're talking about, they're going to determine that they need 3 suppliers in order to meet the capacity. That's a number I've simply made up. Obviously, and it's for ease of calculation and ease of discussion. In many cases, there are going to be a dozen or more companies selected. In some cases, there'll be 5 or 6 or 7. Nevertheless, this is how they do it. They determine what the demand is going to be in terms of their estimates, and then determine from the information provided by bidders how many companies are going to be required in order to meet that demand. Once they've done that, they're going to take all of the bids and they're going to arrange them from lowest to highest composite bids. And beginning with the lowest of those composite bids, bidders are selected until they have enough suppliers to meet expected demand. Once they've reached that point, that is called the pivotal bid. And that's an all-important line in the sand. The pivotal bid is set where 100% of the projected beneficiary demand is estimated by CMS for all of those items in the product category for that CBA are going to be met by all of the suppliers' cumulative capacity within that particular bid. If you're at or below the pivotal bid, you've already met the eligibility and requirements, you're going to be offered a contract. Anybody that's above the pivotal bid is not going to be in the game any longer, with one exception that we'll talk about in a second. So here we are. We've got the example that we were looking at before. Company, here is where the pivotal bid lines up. They need 3 companies, and so they've gone, the lowest is this one, is company D, has the lowest composite bid, and so they're counting back up. I need 3 companies. That's 1, that's 2, and here is 3. Draw the line, that's the pivotal bid. Companies B and A are no longer in the mix. C, D, and E will be offered contracts. What I want you to do over time is I want you to look at how the bids work on all of these in terms of composite bids, because what you're going to find is that the winning companies tended to bid aggressively for those items that had a significant weight. And if they have a significant weight, that has more impact on what their composite bid is going to be than a company that would go and be very aggressive all the way through, or simply say, I'm going to do a percentage off every item. So in the bidding strategy, the important thing is to keep in mind is the composite bid is what you need to pay attention to as what is going to win or lose you the contract for that product category. It's not going to be how aggressive or how, you're going to look at something that's got a very low weight. And let's take one. Let's take this item here where you look at it. It goes a decimal point and something like 5 digits before you get it to a number. It's infinitesimal. It's pretty sizable dollar amount. And you say, I never provide those things, so I'm going to get a huge discount there. Well, doing so doesn't get you very far because, in fact, the weight is so low that multiplied against your bid, your composite or weighted bid is going to be less impactful. So really keep that in mind as you use either the calculators that are provided by the Med Group or other organizations or ones that you've created or ones I've created that I have available. Whatever you use to calculate your bid, the name of the game is going to be get in below the pivotal bid, and that's going to be all important is your composite bid number. The next step in the process is that CBIC will determine a single payment amount for every item within the product category for each CBA, all 117. And that's a whole nother process. The single payment amount is not the amounts that are bid by the lowest composite bid company. It is the median of all the bid prices of the winning bidders on an item-by-item basis for the product category within the CBA. So it's not the average. It's not necessarily the lowest. It's going to be the median, 50% above, 50% below. And that's going to be your single payment amount. This becomes the new payment amount that's going to be offered in the contract for the product products within the product category within the CBA. And once again, it's going to be done individually for 117 CBAs and for seven product categories within those 117 CBAs. So let's take a look at how our example would shake out in that circumstance. So here we have the three winning companies, Company C, D, and E. I've highlighted in yellow what numbers, what single payment amounts will be, which is the median. And again, this is based on three, so it's going to be the one that's smack in the middle between the other two. And you can see that we would pick out single payment amounts from each of those companies to come up with what is going to be the ultimate single payment amount contract awards in that product category for that CBA. And so you have, you're not necessarily going to be presented, and obviously this gets a little more tricky if you have 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 companies that are awarded contracts. Because the need for more companies, the pivotal bid being higher, this is going to be more tricky in terms of the spread between the lowest bid in a product category and the highest bid to that to what is going to be the median or ultimate single payment amount. So it's very crucial that you kind of take a look at that. That's where it is so dangerous when we're talking about suicidal bids, that by bidding low across the board, even with unweighted, unheavily weighted items, money gets left on the table for CMS. I don't have an answer for that. I'm simply stating the fact that bidding a straight aggressive bid from top to bottom, lowest possible for every item, it works to CMS's favor. And doesn't have that much impact on your composite bid. Again, advice that I would give, that I give to my clients, is take a look at your composite bid after you've gotten done calculating it. Go back to the heavily weighted items, see where you can modify those, keeping in mind that they must be defensible, and keeping in mind that you want to make a profit. I'm by no means telling anybody to bid lower than what is reasonable in order to keep their doors open, keep their employees employed, and to put food on their table. But this is competitive bid, and it is competitive. And so this is the way the game is established. Look at it. Okay, now. Given all that, knowing, in fact, how they're going to create all this, how do we actually create a bid? That is, create a bid that is defensible, create a bid that is acceptable to your company and your company's goals, that keeps you in business for 3 years. And I think we've noticed after the initial round two has been completed that there are a number of companies that are no longer with us that have been really significantly and demonstrably negatively impacted by competitive bidding. So the purpose of what we're going to show you here and the purpose of any analysis tool that's provided by myself or by Med or by anybody else is essentially help you calculate your bid, help you to identify the product categories or products within the category that you're going to have to bid aggressively on, but you need to find ways to improve your profitability so you can sustain yourself should you be awarded a contract. And you need to be able to measure and look at what the impact is going to be on your revenue prior to and after a bid scenario is reached. So to do this, there's some data that I think everybody needs. You've got it. It's time to really pay attention to it and to try to analyze it just a little bit before you do your final bid. You're going to want to look at your last annualized profit and loss statements and really take a look at where your money is going and where you can make changes and add to and maximize your efficiencies. You're going to want to look at your revenue, and you're going to want to look that by product category, by product item, by HCPCS code. Both, and I think this is important. I think it's to, while you're doing this, look at it, your total book of business, and look at it vis-a-vis Medicare against your current Medicare allowables. And that means that if you are an area that's totally affected by competitive bidding, then you're going to be looking at what the past single payment amounts are and what any degradation of that single payment amount is going to mean to you. If you're in an area where your book of business is somewhat in a CBA, but somewhat not, then you need to take a look at that and say, how much can I build up my non-competitive bidding book of business to, in essence, subsidize what's going to conceivably be a degradation of the single payment amount. When you're doing that, you're going to have to keep in mind that January 1, 2016, there's going to be a hit for those that are in rural areas because that's when the imposition of the rural single payment amount is going to be imposed by CMS, followed then by the implementation of round two recompete. So some important factors to consider as you're deciding what you can bid and what your thresholds are going to be. CMS has provided bid preparation worksheets are available on the CBIC website. I suggest you download those and take a look because that gives you some really important information. It gives you information in terms of how they're going to do some calculations. It gives you some very important information in terms of weighting, in terms of historical utilization so that you can take a closer look at what in any particular CBA, what a particular item has been, what that utilization factor has been under Medicare, helps you make a wiser, more reasoned judgment in terms of how you're going to bid each and every item. The Med Group has put together with me a revenue impact analysis. This is something that I put together with the input of Wayne and a number of other people, just to, in terms of what we think is necessary for a company to have on a really easy interactive basis to kind of make an idea of what the impact is going to be on their business when they bid. So this is what we need. We need to, you want to know what your total revenue is on an annualized basis. And then here are the product categories and all other non-affected, non-competitive bid Medicare items. And so you want to know how much revenue each one of those represents. That will then result in the percentage of the business that means to you. And it's going to, you will want to know both Medicare and non-Medicare revenues so that you can understand what percentage of Medicare that means to you. So it's fairly simple. If you know what your revenue is by product category, and you understand how much that is to your business and how much of it is Medicare, then you're going to know how much is going to be subject to the bidding, what the reduction might be to you, and what your projected revenue is going to be, and what that impact is going to be. And these are important numbers in order for your business to go forward, not only in determining what your bids might be, but to understand what would happen if you estimate, for example, your estimation is that respiratory is going to be a reduction of 31% over the Medicare allowables, over the bid limit. Let's say it came in at 35. By using this kind of analysis, what you should be able to do not only is develop your bid, but then if you're awarded a contract, look at the resulting single payment amounts that come of the process, and you'll be able to plug those numbers in and see if the impact that you projected is close, or if it's worse, that helps you make a decision as to whether or not you're going to accept the contract. Keep in mind that when the contracts are awarded following the process that we just discussed a little bit earlier, those three companies, C, D, and E, will be offered contracts. Let's assume that company C says, you know what? A lot of the bid items are within the range I bid, but there's a whole bunch of them that are lower than I bid. And I have done my analysis. I don't think I can sustain my business based on those single payment amounts. So I'm going to pass. And they decline the contract. What happens then? In that case, company C has declined the contract. No harm, no foul. They are not penalized in any way, shape, or form. They are simply out of the running and can, in that CBA for that product category, cannot provide those items to Medicare beneficiaries and be paid by the Medicare system. What CMS will do is go to company B, the next one up on the composite bid ladder, and they will look to them and they will offer them the identical contract. They will not recalculate single payment amounts. They will simply offer the same contract to company B, and they will do that on up the line until they have, again, sufficient number of companies to meet beneficiary demand. So you will always have in your hand the opportunity to decline a contract if that is in your best interest to do so. So everybody will be getting this revenue impact analysis worksheet. It's part of the presentation today, part of the Med Group membership benefit package. Gives you an opportunity to take a look at where you're going to be. Now, a lot is said about bona fide bids. Let's talk a little bit about that. Bona fide simply means that the bid complies with all the terms and conditions of the request for bids that was published at the time that the bidding window and timeline was established. It also means that the bid amounts for each item within the product category must be bona fide. Essentially, what this means is that you're looking at a totality of items within a product category. You know that according to the rules, you must bid on each and every one of them. You also know by doing your analysis and so forth that there are some items on there that you rarely, if ever, have any demand or request for. So your first gut reaction, at least mine would be, hey, if I never provide this. I can bid this pretty low because I can bid it as long as I am making money on the items I do see and I do provide. I don't care on this other one. I can bid that really low. Well, yes and no. You can bid it low if you want to. As we mentioned, that's not going to impact your composite bid all that much because it's probably weighted very low. But you also are prohibited from doing a loss leader. In other words, every item within a product category must be bid at a level that is sustainable, that is defensible, that you can offer proof to CMS that the price is sufficient for you to make up your cost of acquisition and your cost of provision. And there are some formulas I have worked with clients in past rounds where they have submitted a bid and CMS has questioned one or two or three items within a bid and said, we think these bids are too low. Please demonstrate to us through documentation of your ability to purchase the items and documentation on how you can provide those items and do so at a profit. What they don't say is how much the profit can be or needs to be. But nevertheless, the idea is to do it at a profit. And you have an opportunity to actually do that and defend your bid. With clients in the past, I've had clients that had chosen to do a bid that was lower than they could defend, and they were disqualified for that particular product category in that CBA. Others have been able to say, here, I've got documentation. I've got a letter from my manufacturer. I've got a quote. I've got a contract. I've got an invoice that shows I can purchase that item at this cost. And here, based on my historical cost of doing business, and you look at it in terms of unit cost of provision, we're able to do some analysis and demonstrate that at the unit cost of provision will be X, and added to Y, the cost of acquisition, that is less than the bid amount that you submitted, and therefore it's defensible, and we can do that. And trust me, CMS will in fact send out those kinds of letters if they feel in their analysis that a bid is not bona fide. So as you do your Form Bs, please keep in mind and be very, very cautious that you submit, when it calls for a purchase bid amount, it's purchase of a new item. And essentially, that's everything that's being bid with the exceptions of the five payment classes for oxygen in the respiratory product category. Those are rental prices. Everything else, CPAP, wheelchairs, hospital beds, everything is asking you as a bid unit for the purchase price of a new item. And so you need to really keep that in mind as you're putting in the bids. I've reviewed bids where people think that they're doing this on a rental basis and have bid too low, and we've had to make corrections. Entering in an incorrect bid inadvertently. It's really important to have a second set of eyes. You're going to get bleary-eyed, even with cutting and pasting, doing multiple Form Bs throughout a number of CBAs, that it's pretty easy to transpose a number. So that if you were trying to bid, $550, and you type in 55 and you got the decimal point in the wrong place, or you were trying to do 55 and you did 550, any number of ways that you can look at that, it ends up being 55 cents. Watch for where you put your decimal points. Make sure that you're not transposing numbers. Those can be pretty important issues when you're completing your Form B. Once again, loss leaders are simply not acceptable and will disqualify your bid should you be questioned on that. Again, you cannot ever submit a zero bid or no bid for any item within a product category that you are submitting. So that, once again, if you're doing respiratory, you're going to have to provide all of the items that are in respiratory. That means liquid, that means CPAP, that means everything that's on that product category. You have to bid, and you have to bid defensively, and you can't cherry pick what you do bid. That also translates into the fact that if you were awarded a contract, you are obligated to provide all of the items within the product category that you bid. You can't just go in there and bid, win, and then say, I don't provide these items, so I'm not going to. That will result in a breach of contract. And that's a pretty serious situation if you get into a breach of contract with a competitive bidding process. That can impact your overall Medicare number, and you sure don't want that. And I think that the Form B really prohibits you. I don't think it'll accept a bid amount above the current Medicare allowable or the bid limit that you see on your Form B. But nevertheless, obviously, bidding more than the bid limit will result in a disqualification of your bid. Again, everything has to be defensible. And that defensible means the cost of acquisition plus the cost of provision must allow for a profit at the bid price that you have bid. Now, capacity. On Form B, you're going to be asked, at the same time that you put in your bid amount for each item, you're going to be asked, how many units can you provide? What is your capacity? Well, first of all, it must be one or greater. You can't say, I'm not going to produce, I don't have a capacity to offer an item, because you're bidding on that item, and that just in essence says, hey, I'll provide it if I am awarded the contract, and I have to, I will do so. So certainly you're going to want to put in at least one. The number above one is going to be something that will be a judgment call on your part. The program bid process, again, is designed by CMS, at least in their estimation, to result in a sufficient number of suppliers so that beneficiaries are going to have access to the items in question within the CBA. So there's sufficient access for the Medicare beneficiary. And we can argue all the rest of today's session and the next session and into the future about whether or not that actually occurs. And we're not going to get anywhere, because the fact of the matter is CMS thinks they've done a very fine job. So we have to live with that. So they calculate their demand, again, based on historical claims data and trending factors and population and census information within CBAs. But on your Form B, you're going to add to their data pile by telling them what your capacity is, so that they're going to look at the cumulative capacity of the bidders so that they can make a determination of what the capacity is of the companies that have qualified and are now in this lump where they've been put together to compare composite bids, so that they can achieve and arrive at a pivotal bid, which will ensure in their minds that beneficiary demand will be met throughout the product category, for the product category in the CBA. Now, they can, if they wish, change whatever you put down. If you put down an amount within the capacity section of the bid, and they're looking at your expansion plan, let's say, and they're looking at what you bid, and they're looking at your historical data, and they feel that you are claiming more than is realistic in their mind, they can change your capacity downward. They will do that automatically for anybody that claims more than 20% of a market share of any particular item. They're going to move that down. But that has absolutely no effect whatsoever on the award of the contract. to you, so that if they change your capacity number, that doesn't put you out of the running. That does not disqualify you. That simply means that there probably be more companies involved in the selection of the pivotal bid than there would have been if they had not adjusted that market share. So, you know, this cuts both ways. Some companies say, I'm going to claim as much capacity as I possibly can, hoping to reduce the number of suppliers that will be chosen. Well, that's a dangerous game to play, because you have to ensure that your bid is going to be competitive enough within a smaller universe of suppliers in order to be chosen. So let's say that company B was playing that game, they would have lost, because they were above the pivotal bid. At the same time, if all of those companies bidding in that CBA had bid a small capacity, that would have resulted in a greater number of companies being involved in the bid and awarded a contract, and that increases competition within the CBA. So you have to make a judgment as to what is more important to you in regards to the capacity. But my message to you is that you need to enter in a reasonable number. Be honest. Don't give CMS or the CBIC any reason to really red flag your bid for any reason by being really outlandish on the capacity, because it absolutely has no impact. It just is a no-win game. Be honest on what you think you can furnish throughout the CBA for that item over the course of 1 year. Simple as that. Just be honest and realistic. Again, if they think that you have claimed more, or you claim more than 20%, they're going to lower it anyway. Any adjustments they make has no impact on whether or not you're finally chosen. And what's important to understand under the capacity rules is you're not required, if you put down X number of items, you're not going to be required to meet that number every year. And at the same time, that does not say to CMS that you can limit yourself to that number. Again, that number is simply to determine how many companies will be chosen within a CBA for the product category. It has no lasting effect. So in this past round, I have heard of companies that have claimed to CMS, hey, I've met my capacity that I stated on my bid, I'm not taking anymore. Well, that's breach of contract. You have to take all comers for the course of the year, whether it's more than the capacity you said you could accept or not. Others have complained, I put down a capacity number and I'm not getting anybody. Well, there is no guarantee either. Again, it's only for the use of CMS to calculate the number of suppliers they need. So no guarantee that you're going to receive any business, no limit to the business that you're going to get. It's a free market within the CBA at the single payment amounts among those that are contract suppliers. High capacity doesn't provide you with an advantage. Low capacity doesn't negatively impact the decision to award you a contract. Now, there are a number of tools that I put together. I know that Med Group and some of its partners have put together tools and things that you can use. The four that I have that people seem to value would be a composite bid calculator, where you can put in your bid and actually do the calculation by product category for the composite bid. I have, for those that really need to start someplace with a discount amount, a percentage off of Medicare, the bid limit, a calculator that gets to that number quickly. I do a product profit calculator that enables you to enter in manufacturers, and it's a little more complicated. That is something that we use to defend a bid it's certainly one that helps you pick out which manufacturer is the most profitable for you, also gives you the ability to make some judgments in terms of the cost of provision and identify areas where that may be too costly. And then a bid impact calculator that's a little more complex, a little more complete, I think, than the calculator that we're providing you as a result of this webinar. And that bid impact calculator will take for each of the product categories what the impact is going to be on your revenue and your bottom line. It automatically, if you enter in your P&L, it will automatically show you where it's going to impact your bottom line and where you need to, what I think of is revenue replacement. That competitive bid ultimately has, throughout all of the previous rounds, resulted in negative impact on winning companies' revenue. And so it's important for them to understand where that negative impact is going to be and to determine ways of replacing that revenue through other product lines or other business ventures. Anybody that would be interested in any of those, you have my contact information, and we'll take it from there. I think, you know, I was, Jana, thinking about doing live reviews of some of the calculators, but I think it's more important. I think the people here are pretty sophisticated, can see and use Excel spreadsheets, which most of these are based on. I think it's probably more important that we deal with whatever questions people have at this point.
Sure, John, not a problem. Do we know if any modifiers are being used for the round two rebid?
If you're saying modifiers, no. These are all, again, they're not putting modifiers in there. They're simply, in the case of oxygen, they're lumping together what they call payment class to result in a bid for a rental bid amount. Everything else is simply going to be the purchase of a new item. From there, if it's inexpensively, or if it is a rental, a capped rental, the bid sheet will demonstrate how they're going to come up with a single payment amount. It's going to be based on 10% of the purchase single payment amount purchase price for the first 3 months, and then 7.5% for months 4 through 13 to come up with the monthly rental. But there are no, they don't use modifiers. They simply give you the item, HCPCS number, and the weight, and previous and utilization numbers. And from there, you're on your own.
Okay. They're requiring the bidder number on each page, but do you recommend writing the page number on each of the pages in the package that you so you can maintain the integrity of the package so they indicate missing pages?
Most that I see don't necessarily have page numbers. I think that's an excellent question. Certainly anything you can do to maintain the integrity of the package that you submit is an important thing to do. It's critical, obviously, that you have the bidder number. Let's take a worst case scenario. Because your submission of the hard copy documents must be loose leaf, you cannot, as I've mentioned before, use staple, paper clips, gum or Velcro to put them together. You can't use folders. You can't use a binder of any sort. They have to be loose leaf. They do that because they're going to scan this information. And they don't want any of these foreign substances or foreign objects getting into their very expensive scanner and gumming up the works and nor do they want to slow down the process by having personnel take them pieces apart. Now, the mailroom, all this stuff comes in. You've got Johnny Smith, and he's putting together all of these loose leaf pages into a banker's box, and he's walking down the hall to the scanner room, and he trips, and papers fly everywhere. Well, the bidder number is what's going to put that back together for them. I think if you put a page number, that would be helpful, because that then assists them in assuring they have everything together. What's most important is that you meet the covered document review date, because if a piece of that paper snow slides under the janitor's door, and is never seen again, at the end of the bidding window, when they do the review, they're going to tell you, you know, we don't seem to have your income statement. And that will provide you 10 days to give them the income statement that they're missing. So the answer, I guess that was long-winded. The answer is make sure you have bidder number. That's what really ties it together. Having page numbers is just an added insurance, if you will, to make sure that they have the entire package. And if you're going to do page numbers, do one of 15. Don't just do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because you just need to know. That helps them understand how many pages are in the entire package.
Okay. Our organization only stocks some of the available products within a particular product category. It just doesn't make sense to stock some items that aren't utilized. With that, what is the best approach to determining manufacturer model name and model number info for products we don't currently offer?
Well, let's break that down a little bit. The first thing to do is go onto the Form B and see if the items for which they ask you manufacturer name and model number are actually the items that you have that question about. I would be inclined to bet that because they use what they call, quote, the top HCPCS codes. There are only 4 or 5 items per product category that they're going to ask you manufacturer and model number for anyway. And I'm going to assume and bet that those are going to be items that you do offer. If on the outside chance they do ask you a manufacturer and model for an item that you don't stock, you're not required to, or I shouldn't say you're not going to be obligated to provide that 100% of the time at any time in the future. What I would do is I'd contact the med group. I would get from the med group what they recommend in terms of their purchasing contracts, and I would use the model and model number and manufacturer that would support the med group, knowing that that probably is not going to be an issue down the line.
That is correct, and we do have a lot of that information on the contract profiles for those of you on the phone. We do have that information on our website, and or your PAR or personal account rep can help you with that. Does CMS look at the composite bid by HCPCS or only the category composite bid?
They do not look at the composite bid individually. They use that composite bid for the particular item. Think of it as the item weighted bid. It's the sum of all of the weighted bids within that weighted bid items within that product category that become the composite bid. It's the sum total. You could have absolutely a winning bid, the lowest possible composite bid for a specific item, say the lowest possible composite bid for concentrators. But if your composite bid at the bottom for the entire product category respiratory is higher than the pivotal bid, it doesn't matter.
Will contractors be required to have the capacity to provide liquid oxygen, or can they subcontract that, which they can subcontract that still, correct, John?
Yes, subcontracting is still acceptable. If you find that you're awarded a contract and you have a need to provide liquid and you don't do so, and you have a provider that is within your service area that you can work with and get a subcontract, so long as that subcontractor is a Medicare provider in good standing, accredited and appropriately licensed, and is not on the exclusion list, you may subcontract with them for the provision of that item. You will be responsible anytime you subcontract. Keep in mind that CMS does not recognize the subcontractor. Any problems with delivery, with service that come to their mind, to their attention, they're not going to call the subcontractor. They're going to call you. So be careful in terms of selection of your subcontractors.
Okay. How do you recommend bidding a rental item that rents for 13 months now that we have to choose a single purchase price? I believe it lets you know how to calculate that, correct, John, at the top of the worksheets?
Yeah, it does. They show how they're going to arrive at the monthly price, and you're going to have to back into it a little bit. It's a double-edged sword. I understand why people will start looking at that and saying, okay, what's my monthly rental going to be if I bid this? You just need to use the formula that they're going to use and say, how low can I live? What is the lowest I can live with if I won at the single payment amount? And it's basically going to be the first 3 months will be 10% of the purchase price bid that is selected in the process. And then the next 10 months are going to be at 7.5. So you just kind of calculate what the totality of that is to back into what your purchase price bid might be.
Okay. And one is more comments on how you could put in your purchase price and or the purchase price is $1, a single payment amount, and your bid's $1.20. But then I can refuse the bid, and obviously there are suicide bids to watch others suffer. Was there not going to be a bonded bid during this round?
There is not a bonded bid during this round. No, that's another myth that's taken place. That was legislation that was introduced in the last session of Congress. It was not acted upon. The last session of Congress, of course, adjourned, and in January we have a new Congress, and it's been reintroduced into both houses of Congress. And Wayne can speak to this if he'd like to. But the provisions that would require bonding have not been passed and do not apply to this round of bidding. The requirement to accept a contract if awarded is not in effect in this round. That just has not happened. The only, and I'm going to be very blunt, the only way that it can have an impact is if Congress, both houses, pass that legislation and do it like right now and get it to the president's desk and he signs it and it's enacted before the implementation of this bidding round. I think it's pretty difficult. Wayne, if you disagree with me, please speak up.
It's difficult. However, this has been taken into account. As John said, the previous binding bid legislation was not enacted upon in the 113th Congress, which ended December 31st. The new Congress, the 114th, we do have both a House bill and a Senate bill. Okay, there have been discussions with the staffers on the committees of jurisdiction, so staffers on Energy and Commerce, Ways and Means, and also on Senate Finance, about trying to get this to apply to this round. However, as John said, this has not been signed. It's not been approved. Time is of the essence. Many of you guys are aware of, you've heard of the Doc Fix Bill or the SGR. It's the same thing. Okay. That is running out at the end of March. That is our best opportunity to have something happen. But again, I want to be very clear. Nothing has happened as of right now. But it's important that we contact our legislators. I know you guys have heard me say this for years. I'm going to keep telling you this, okay? They need to hear from you. A Home Care is doing a great job on the Hill, but if they're not hearing from, if they're not hearing from a Sam Clay, if they're not hearing from, that Billy and Joey Tard, if they're not hearing from all those people out in the field, then nothing happens, okay? But as John said, it's not in this provision right now. We do have a shot, but it's got to happen quickly. Okay.
Now I want everybody to understand that in the very first round one, if you recall, going back that far in history, there was actually a doc fix bill that was passed, and the provisions to pull back competitive bidding were enacted after the implementation of the round. The contracts were signed, sealed, delivered, and there were 10 days of operations of competitive bidding, and then it was rescinded. Conceivably, that could happen. I don't see this getting passed and pushed through by March 25th. If that happens, I'd love to be wrong on that score. But if it happens after March 25th, please don't hang up your phones and say, well, it's over. As Wayne says, let your voice be heard, because there is still time after March 25th for Congress to act and for the implementation of changes before the contracts are signed in 2016. So seriously, you're going to bid as if that's not going to happen, and understand that you need to bid, but keep up the pressure with Congress. It's too important.
Guys, how many times have we had it to where, you know, CMS or the DemiMax come out and they said, oh yeah, by the way, this is retroactive to 6 months ago. Okay. I mean, we all shake our head and go, how can you make that happen? Well, in this case, that may be a good thing. So again, keep up the pressure. They need to hear from you. Thanks, John.
You bet.
Is capacity estimated from the beneficiary count or the allowed units, John?
Would you repeat that, please?
Yes, sir. Is capacity estimated from beneficiary count or allowed units?
I would look at the allowed units, because the allowed units tell you how much how much utilization of that particular item was actually paid for by Medicare. And that can have a difference from beneficiary count. So I'd be taking a look when I'm doing capacity. I would pay attention to the allowed units, because that is what Medicare's authorized.
Okay. With the news of CMS ramping up audits, does it still make sense to bid on higher end products?
Oh, golly.
That's.
I don't know where to go with the answer there, other than to say that I've heard companies tell me that, well, I'm going to bid because I'm tired of audits. Well, guess what? If you bid and you win within, and you're a contract supplier, you are now under a little more scrutiny than your colleagues that did not win, because you are the one that's actually providing that. I don't see audits decreasing. So it's got to be a business decision that you make. And I think the deciding factor is going to be, hey, you know, do your analysis using some of the tools that we've talked about this morning, and make a sound business decision on your own mind. In my area, if they have been auditing consistently and continuously on these items, and the chances are they're going to continue to do so. And if they do so, what's that impact on me, and is it worth the bother and the hassle and the cost? And if it's not, when you put all that together, doing a cost-benefit analysis, there you have your answer.
Hey, John, this is Wayne. Folks, I was up in D.C. about 2 weeks ago with one of your fellow members who is part of competitive bidding in the Carolinas. He is getting hit with as many audits as in the past, maybe even a little bit more. So please don't think just because you win, you somehow are audit proof. You're not. You will be audited. I can assure you of that. There's just less of you to audit, so that you're going to get more than you did in the past. So that is a rumor. I wish I'd find out who started that, because I'd like to shut them up. But again, you will be audited.
Okay.
Jana?
Yes, I'm here. Will having higher or lower capacity relative to market competitors increase your chance of being at or below the pivotal bid?
No, it has no impact on your pivotal bid. Let me pull that back. If you alone are putting in your capacity trying to get above or below the pivotal bid, you're going to have to hope that your competitors are doing exactly the same thing you are. It doesn't impact whether or not what your composite bid is or whether or not you're offered a contract. But if everybody, for example, if everybody within a CBA bidding on a product category bid a low capacity, there will be more suppliers, so your chances of being, you know, at or below the pivotal bid are increased, as opposed to if everybody in that CBA for that product category decided to bid high capacity, that will reduce the number of suppliers, theoretically, that they need. And if they reduce the number of suppliers necessary, then it's going to be a bottom feeder result.
Okay. Next question. Since the initial round two bid, our hospital system has purchased another hospital that owns 50% of a DME company. I understand that we cannot bid on the same categories, but do I need to list that business as a location on the application as they are also bidding as well?
If it is a common ownership and commonly controlled, in other words, the same entity, whether it is an individual or a corporate entity, own 5% or greater of another company, and they're both within the same product, they're the same CBA, and they bid the same product category, you're going to run into problems because you cannot bid against each other. And so you will have to be bidding as commonly owned and commonly controlled and meet the rules of a bid for commonly owned and commonly controlled, and that's going to be in your Form A. Now, if there are two commonly owned and commonly controlled companies, they're both independent, they're both individual entities, and they just happen to have that common control, and they are in different CBAs, they can bid solely within those CBAs because they're not competing against each other. What they cannot do is bid the same CBA product category combination. They could bid in the same CBA if one did respiratory and one did general HME, and they're not bidding against each other. You can do that as well.
Right. Okay. Is the purchase single payment amount divided by 13 months, or does it reduce by 25% as before after 3 months? I believe the payment type is still the same as before, correct?
That is correct.
How can CMS choose suppliers 1,000 miles away to provide service? Is there anything they will be changing for this round? For last round, we saw that they weren't in a CBA supplying to different suppliers. Has anything changed on that?
No.
Okay.
Expect the same behavior. The only change to that is going to be the impact that's going to be felt by sleep companies that were CPAP specialists that did not provide oxygen. Now they're finding themselves scrambling because it is impossible to bid CPAP without bidding oxygen. So there may be some reduction in that activity in that particular sector, but overall, the rules still permit, so long as you have an entity or location that is able, under the supplier standards, accreditation, and licensure rules, able to provide for the needs of the beneficiary, the product being awarded, everybody can bid everywhere.
Okay. And if you know that your accreditation is current with your accrediting body, but it's not listed on your 855 that you pulled off of Pecos, is that a concern, or do you need to do anything differently? Since you know,
it's a concern. I would be in touch with the NSC and make sure that they have a record of your accreditation. I'd also be in touch with the accrediting body to ensure that they have been in touch with the NSC to make sure it's there. So yeah, I think it's a concern. So you need to follow that up.
Okay.
One thing that you're looking at is that if you see something on PECOS where it says, no, you're not accredited, read it more carefully, because it can be, are you exempt from accreditation, and see the no. I had a client that, frankly, came a little unglued when they thought that they were not being listed as accredited. And what they were looking at was the answer no was no, they were not exempt. And yes, NSC and PCOS did have record of their accreditation. So I'd check with the accrediting body, and I'd also check with NSC to make sure everything's kosher.
And there is not, true, there is not a requirement whether the bidder must have a location in the competitive bid area they are bidding on, except wouldn't it be true in certain states that's required by state? Is that true, John?
If the state requires a physical location in order to grant a required license, then you must have a physical location. You do not have to have a physical location in the CBA if you have a location that meeting all of the supplier guidelines and licensing and accreditation that governs the CBA, you are able to serve that beneficiary, you may do so. Keep in mind, it's got to be the same rules all the way across. So the same rule that governs, if you're in New York, if you're in the Bronx, you're going to be dealing with CBAs that are in Nassau County, Suffolk County. You may go to Jersey, into Jersey City, Camden, a number of areas. There can be five or six. If you're in Chicago or you're in LA, you can have one single location and have as many as four or five CBAs surrounding you. You do not need to have a location in absolutely every one of those CBAs. That's ridiculous, and it's one of those times that CMS has got it nailed. But if you say to somebody, you don't have to have a location in the CBA and another a neighboring state or a state, you know, an area two states away that you want to serve does not require physical location or maybe doesn't even require a license, you're still able to bid that location.
Okay. As a winning bidder, can you subcontract equipment for an out-of-state company? Example, we win and provide oxygen. We receive a subcontract offer from a company in Florida to provide oxygen when they receive a referral in my CBA.
I'm going to need you to give me the example again. I'm trying to think
okay.
that through.
An example. We win and provide oxygen. They are awarded a contract in the respiratory category. We receive a subcontract offer from a company in Florida to provide oxygen when they receive a referral in my CBA.
I can't think of any reason why not, but I want to research that a little bit more. I think that would be perfectly legitimate.
Okay, we'll get back to the person that asked that after the webinar, after John has some time to research that. Okay, that is all of the questions that is in the queue, and it is almost 3:30. Time flies when you're having a great time talking about competitive bidding. As everyone knows, John's information is on the screen to contact him about any of the other spreadsheets. I did send out the spreadsheet that Med has to evaluate the cost of your bid. You can definitely reach out to John. Wayne, do you have anything to follow up with?
No, just want to thank everybody. Guys, we know there was a lot of information passed over today. This is important information. This is as we talk about where the rubber hits the road. Use the calculators. We've had Med members comment on John's calculators. You're not obligated to purchase them, but they've been helpful, and in some cases very helpful according to your fellow Med members in helping them really figuring out how what they're going to bid on. It gives you a chance to play with it and see and really where do we want to put in our bid and putting together this forming strategy. So. We are here to help, guys. Please send us some, if you have any questions, we're here to answer those for you. We're here to assist. We can't tell you what to bid, nor would we ever. I've been asked that once or twice already. I couldn't live with myself if I told you what to bid and you guys lost, okay? Bid what you feel is comfortable. Bid what you think is reasonable. And if you decide not to bid, that's fine too. That's your decision. It's about controlling your company. Okay, But we're here to assist you. And again, anything we can do, please feel free to contact us at any time. Okay? Thank you so much. Everybody have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Thank you.